Hello and welcome to the weekend update on, what day is it again? Friday the 3rd of December. I mean, it's the 3rd day of December, for fuck's sake. We've been doing these bloody advent calendars. You know, you think I'd... Hello and welcome to the weekend update, Friday the 3rd of December. It's 11:16 UK time, Scotland time, Celtic Park time. I am joined this week by the debuting Mark Braceland. Hello, Mark. How the hell are you?
Doing well, mate. Careful on that UK thing there. That's, might just want to watch that, pal.
As soon as I said it, I instantly regretted it. I thought Barry Gallagher's going to turn up at my door with an Armalite, but I don't think he will. I think he'll be fine. It'll just be he'll have a wee word with me. That's fine. It's good to hear from you, Mark. How are you? You are in Canada. What time is it there?
I'm doing well. It's 7:15 here in the People's Free Republic of Canada.
Jesus, up so early.
It's not that bad. Yeah. I'm pretty weird. So I'm normally up at about 5 in the morning. So this is fine.
Wait, have you always been up at 5 in the morning, or is that since you went to Canada?
I've always been kind of an early riser.
Yeah. Do you go to bed late as well?
Nah, I'm like in bed by 10. 10's late.
Yeah, that explains a lot, to be fair.
Despite the time difference, we probably go to bed at the same time, I would say.
very good. So Mark, based in Canada, he is the Cynic's in-house historian. We have a fantastic episode of the stories and the songs. We recorded it last week. It's on Charlie Tully. I'm in the midst of editing it, and it sounds terrific. We've got some stuff coming up this week. We've got some stuff coming up throughout December. Obviously, this is the Celtic's busy period. I want to comment on the fact that in the Discord, there was a few, and this will include yourself, Mark, a few people have been asking about like the passport vaccine sort of rollouts and stuff. There's some people, I know that are you back for the Hibs game on the 28th? 29th?
Yeah, I will be back for that. I was, actually the rules have kind of changed with the new variant. So I was actually hoping to get back. Well, I'll be back in time technically for the cup final as well. But with the new isolation regimen and stuff, I won't be able to go to the stadium for that. I did look at changing my flights for it, but it's going to cost about a grand to change the flights just because it's so close and it's December and stuff. So
yeah,
I'll spend that in a hotel room in bloody London to isolate and get a PCR test, because before it was just like a lateral flow test you could take.
Yeah, so how long are you going to be isolating for in London?
2 days, 2 or 3 days, I think. Right. Yeah, which is shite.
So does that mean you're going to watch the cup final in the hotel?
We'll just have to watch it in like a hotel room or something.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, it'll be shite.
For people that are wondering regard, because I know, as I say, it's been in, I think Pierce mentioned it, Stuart mentioned it as well, Alan kind of responded, but I can't begin to tell you how much they're just looking for an official looking document. Yesterday, when we were walking to the stadium, myself and Claire's got it on her phone, so she just kind of swiped her phone, but I've got a piece of paper in my wallet, and I opened up the piece of paper, and even before I'd got it open up, they saw that it was like the NHS thing, and like it was official, and the guy just went, "I ain't bother." And when we went to see Les Miserables on Wednesday, and same sort of thing, the guy came down the queue and he's like, "Have you got your passport?" And I literally took a piece of paper as I was opening it, before I'd even opened it, went, "Terrific, thank you, cheers, man." So it's all, it's very, you know, if people are worrying about, you know, whether they've got a US one or with, I don't think it's going to be too much of a problem at all.
I was a wee bit worried about that as well, but I might just write NHS in highlighter on like a scrap piece of paper and just show that.
Yeah, and then just put your name and then a big green tick. Now, if you put a red X, you're in trouble, but a big green tick and you'll be absolutely fine. No bother at all.
I absolutely love the big green tick anyway.
Who doesn't? Hey, listen, big fan. But yeah, so I mean, I don't think, if you've got something official, I know that Stuart was saying in the Discord, he was kind of mentioning the fact that his is like a sort of different type of thing. Honestly, if it's official and it says that you've had both vaccines, I think you'll be fine. As I say, I don't even think that they don't even look at it. And I just want to highlight, I put it on Twitter yesterday. The wee guy I sit beside at Celtic, I don't sit beside him because he's my pal, the wee guy who sits next to me, comes in every single time, comes in about 2 minutes after kickoff, walks up very polite, sits down, opens his jacket, takes his half charge of Buckfast, puts it in the exact same spot, very efficiently puts it down, then he starts watching the game, takes his jacket off, and then every time he takes a scoop of it, he picks it up, opens it up very, like, he doesn't just unscrew it, like, rattle open. He just takes his time and unscrews it like a gentleman, puts the thingy on his knee. It takes it like it's medicine, Mark. And, you know, it's very efficient. And, you know, the timing that he takes it. See, by the time that we're about to finish the game, he's just finishing his last bit. And it's like, this guy, the timing is sensational. Do you like a half-charger bucket at the football yourself?
No, I stick to the rules and regulations surrounding taking bottles into the stadium. More of a pre-gamer.
Yeah. Pre and post?
Pre and post, but it's a dangerous game, so he's probably got it right. You know that feeling sometimes when you're steaming before the game and then you kind of get this weird like hangover? You either get tired or you kind of lose your wind.
Yeah. Yeah, I absolutely know all about that, don't worry. You're halfway through AC Milan versus Celtic in 2004 and you're like, oh, for fuck's sake, where am I? What's going on? What year is it?
Yeah, you're walking in the toilets and you just suddenly pull a Dida. Flop to the floor.
Flop to the floor.
I need my medicine.
I need it. Chris Bowd, he just has no sense of... He likes a half charge when he can take it and... He's usually got it finished on the way walking up to the stadium. So, if you ever have the opportunity to watch a game of football with him, it's the Red Wine Podcast times 10. Let's start with the opening question. This question's a bit of fun, but Mark Braceland, opening question. Can your nerves take the rest of the season?
Well, I guess they're going to have to, otherwise it's death.
Yeah.
But I feel like death might be more imminent compared to the end of the season. I had a bit of a nightmare watching the game yesterday. We were in Halifax in Nova Scotia, so we did the six-hour drive there on Wednesday night and then came back yesterday. So I watched the game in the car while Francis was driving, just on my phone, and between Francis driving in the snow and me watching the game, my nerves are shattered. I'm still tired after it. But every game, it's just like, it's getting to levels where like I can't enjoy it. Like, and then that first half yesterday, Celtic played phenomenally well, and that kind of helped. But the second half, and same against Aberdeen as well, like every game just seems like an absolute, like it's nerve-wracking no matter how well we're playing.
Yeah, I mean... I thought the drop off was quite painful to see, and you know, obviously we can talk about that in a little bit more detail. Obviously, that's substitutions and it's, you know, various reasons. But you know, I was thinking about this yesterday when I was lying in bed, and I was like, contemporary times, let's say the last sort of decade, post Lennon, you had the Huns go bust, and then they're not in the league. Which means the challenge that we've got in the league is not as obviously robust, shall we say. And we win the league fairly comfortable. Then it's Rodgers, and he's just, that team is just head and shoulders above everyone, so you don't worry about anything. And then the Lennon just doing... So my point being, this is the first season where it's felt like a genuine competition, because we weren't in it last season and it was over by November. But like it's like every point's a prisoner. And when we drop points, it genuinely feels like the end of the world. It kind of feels like it used to feel, Mark, in a wee bit, in a wee way. And I'm not necessarily happy about it, I'll be honest. What's your thoughts?
It's kind of like, I don't think I've felt like this since like Strachan time.
Yeah.
And it was a different point in my life, so I was steaming for most of that. So so I don't think I had such nerves, more just like drunken bravado and everything would be fine. But yeah. It's tough right now. It definitely is, even though the football is in parts very good. It's every single game feels like a cup final right now.
That's exactly it. And you know, those last 5 or 10 minutes to that game yesterday, man, honestly, I was... Nerves were absolutely shredded. The whole stadium just seemed... An anxiety had kind of draped over the whole stadium. And there's something... You know, I said to Claire as we were coming out, I was like, you kind of feel like you're all in it together in a weird way. I remember when we were... Oh, what game was it? Barcelona at home when Larsson scored and Celtic played awfully just before Chris Sutton came off the bench. But like, and we were getting absolutely hammered. And I just remember thinking, like, we're all in this together. I know that sounds really pathetic, but it did feel like everyone was pulling together yesterday. I know that, again, maybe people disagree, but I felt like that. And that's I like that kind of we're all in it together. We've got some news. We'll talk about the Aberdeen game in a minute. The reaction with Graham, Louis and Eddie is in your feed. It was very good. Paul Carlin did the producing on that. Thanks to Paul. Terrific stuff. We'll touch on the Aberdeen game in a moment. We've got some clips as well to play. But there is a little bit of news. Firstly, we'll start with Joe Hart. With 23, Celtic's Joe Hart has made more saves than any other goalkeeper in this season's Europa League, despite the Glasgow side shipping the most goals in any group so far with 13, according to the competition's new statistics league. Joe Hart! Nobody wanted him. Certainly will include myself. What have you made of him so far, Mark?
I definitely didn't want to be signed either. Clean hair, shite pattern, and... And it just seemed to have dropped off a cliff too. So, yeah, I don't think I think we'd be revisionist to say that anyone wanted him to sign. But he's impressed me for sure. He has. And you know, those stats are, they're interesting. I mean, in isolation, they only mean what the percentages say, but, you know, it's 63.8% of saves. So I had a quick look at, like, his previous statistics in the Premier League. And his last season there, in 2018-19 with Burnley, he had a save percentage of 65.2, conceded 41 goals in 19 games, which is a hefty amount of goals. But
Jesus.
I imagine Burnley concede a lot of chances. But in the Europa League this year, you know, he's kind of it's middle of the road, really, in terms of save percentages. You've got the Finnish keeper at Leverkusen, who's at 90.9% save percentage, which is insane. And then Napoli are way down at the bottom. They've had both Ospina and Merritt in goals, and they're at 36.4%. So I think, but like I say, like those percentages, without understanding what the actual XG, you know, the actual quality of those chances are, I guess they just, in isolation, they're just percentages, and they might be somewhat meaningless. But, you know, some of the stats guys, I'm sure, could pull some of that data and see just how worthwhile a stat that those percentages are.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at obviously the double save against Leverkusen away and just some of the saves just in general in the Europa League, that's what's impressed me most. Is it's not just that he's making saves domestically and he's been completely outgunned and outclassed from a European point of view. He's really standing up and being counted in Europe, which was something obviously Fraser Foster was noted for. You know, Joe Hart is 34, so you do wonder, you know, there will be a drop-off probably fairly soon. I really like him. I think he's great. He's got a 3-year contract here, so terrific. I do fear that, you know, it's like our squad, right? So you've got Joe Hart, who's playing really, really well, and I think he's a really quality goalkeeper. And he's doing some stuff that, no matter what you think of him, he's doing stuff that no other goalkeeper we have can do. But it's that drop-off. You know, you don't want Bane playing, do you, Mark?
Definitely don't. Aye. saying he's doing things that a goalkeeper can do that none of our others can. I mean, we don't really have any other goalkeepers. Not Bane and Barkas, but I don't know. The bar's low. It's probably not the biggest priority, but it's our priority, I think, for us as a squad. And that succession thing isn't something that we've historically ever done very well. But yeah, at some point, Joe Hart is going to have a drop off. So having someone in behind him that, you know, can actually take over when it's time for him to move on, it's would be ideal. But will we do it? Probably not.
The young team goalkeeper Toby Aloemi, I think, is someone. Kieran mentioned it in his article on The Athletic, someone that the club rate highly. He's been on the bench from a Europa League perspective. So, you know, you look at that and you think, okay, cool, there is potentially... I think he was told that he will be Celtic number one within 3 years, which seems quite quick, but at the same time, okay, good, let's start kind of developing. But you don't want to throw a young boy like that in at the deep end, do you, Mark?
No, I mean, but like, how many times do you think Connor Hazard was told that?
Good point.
I mean, I don't remember that. Well, I mean, David Marshall maybe be the last goalkeeper that we brought through our youth system. But, I mean, that didn't really work out, bar, you know, obviously one very big performance. And he had a great career, actually. But I can't really think of a goalkeeper that we brought through.
The only one I can think of is Stuart Kerr. But Stuart Kerr started off brightly. And it's better to shine for a small amount of period than to fade away. I don't know. That phrase where you're good for a wee bit and then you're rubbish, because that's what happened with Stuart Kerr. Although he did headbutt Mark Hatley. So, terrific stuff. Jeremy Frimpong says he had to overhaul his game after leaving Celtic for Bayer Leverkusen in January, with the 20-year-old right-back claiming his former side only ever had to defend against three teams every season in the Scottish Premiership. Look, see, when you dominate life and you're the greatest of all time, then maybe your fullbacks don't have to defend, and maybe you shut up, son. How about that? Thoughts, Mark?
Yeah, I really wish Celtic players didn't talk about Celtic. I don't know why he's doing this to us. I really want to like Frimpong. It's hard, you know, like... Always seesawing between feelings of hatred of players that leave us and then feelings of, well, this is what we actually have to do if we're going to, you know, kind of, quote, modernise the club. So players need to move on, and Frimpong was really great in his time at the club. But yeah, I really wish he didn't talk about us.
Yeah, I mean, Louis always gets a hard time from Sir Manny for reacting over the top to some ex-players, and I think, you know, I think Louis does, you know, it's part of the stick, it's part of the gimmick, I get it. You know, Louis is basically a wrestling character, there's absolutely no question about it. But at the same time, you know, he is right sometimes. So like Edwards left, and all he's ever said is, what a club, what a support, no bother. Ayer was misquoted, actually, when he said he wanted to go, but, you know, Ayer's been very respectful. And then there's other guys who leave and it's just like, oh, it was so shit. I remember Stylian Petrov was the one, oh, I only had to try 25% when I was playing against Inverness, and it's just like, why say that?
Absolutely, until it's time for them to pump an autobiography or something.
Yeah, well, that's it, until it's time for them to turn up at the Hydro with, you know, is Stylian Petrov doing shows like that with Aston Villa? Because I don't think he is.
I just eight grannies knitting in the front.
Aye, fucking eight grannies is too many. That's only four, because the other two of them are sick, unfortunately.
There's still two missing.
Yeah, they died.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so a bit disrespectful, Mark, to the two grannies that died.
Birmingham's pretty rough. Yeah. So I don't know. How old do people live
still
in Birmingham?
It's probably, I don't know why we're on this route. Do you want to have a look and see what the life expectancy of someone in Birmingham is? Or shall we move on?
It's probably quite similar to Glasgow, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good working class city, to be fair, Birmingham. I just wanted to highlight, because, like, you know, I'm sure that headline as well probably isn't what the article, he's probably been quite nuanced about it, but I just see it, and it's like a red rag to a bull for me. It's like, when you criticise Celtic, that's bad enough, but when you criticise Scottish football, it's like, you wouldn't have got your move to Bayer Leverkusen without Scottish football. You'd be rotting in the Manchester City reserves, or you'd be playing for a championship club. Like, that platform and that level gave you the opportunity. And, you know, as I say, it's not even about Frimpong, it's just about ex-players criticising the club or criticising the level that fucking made them. I've never heard Virgil van Dijk really criticise Scottish football that much. I've never heard, you know, Andy Robertson or Kieran Tierney, why would they? They're from here. But it just, as I say, it's a little irrational as well. I totally understand that, but it also just fucking annoys the shit out of me.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's think about yesterday. Let's talk about yesterday. What did you make of the game overall? Obviously, you said you were at a high level of anxiety. What did you make of Celtic's performance? Who impressed you? What did you think?
I mean, generally, I probably should watch the game back. I feel like I was saying, kind of, you feel like every game's a cup final. You don't really watch the game that well.
Yeah.
I thought Hearts were really passive. Certainly in that, you know, in the first half, it was hard for me to understand, was it just that Celtic were playing really, really well? Or, you know, I'm sure Hearts contributed too. They were quite passive. They were playing quite a high line. That opened up a lot of different types of attack for us. I thought generally we were a lot more balanced, which was great to see. I've felt like the last few weeks, our only tactic or our only route of attack has been like, past the Jota on the left-hand side. It kind of sounds like past the Duchy to the left-hand side. just Big Ange stood there in the dressing room singing past the Jota on the left-hand side. But I feel like we were a much more balanced team with Rogic coming back in, Forrest on the right. We were able to kind of use both flanks. And then also with Hearts pushing quite high up, which seemed a bit naive, but I don't really know why they would set up that way. But it seemed to open up the middle for us a lot more too. But that could also have been the Rogic effect. He was superb.
I thought Rogic was peerless yesterday. He definitely tired towards the end, but first game back from being out for a couple of weeks, you obviously expect that. But I thought he was just something else. You know, I agree with your kind of thoughts. I think that, you know, we'll get to the comments in a moment, but like the comments where it's like in fact, you know what? I'll get to them now. Robbie Nielsen said, "I've seen it. Everyone would agree that the goal is offside. I don't want to say too much. The last time I did at Ibrox, I had the book thrown at me. We deserve to take something out of the game. Did you? Is that right? In key moments in the game, Craig Gordon had a few key good saves." How can you have it both ways, you know? Do you know? Idiot. "But we had good chances, but we were done by a very, very poor official." So there's a narrative being drawn that essentially this whole match was decided by a referee decision. What's your take on that?
The goal was onside. 100%.
Yeah.
No questions asked.
I would have preferred if it was offside. I'm actually gutted that it was onside. I'm serious, because I like when we get a decision against us and then the whole of Scottish football just decides that we are the same as Rangers. And, oh, when you go to Glasgow, are you fucking joking? Did you see the Aberdeen penalty last week? Did you see the penalty against the Huns got against fucking Hibs? Are you kidding? It's ridiculous.
Nielsen, I don't know what game he's watching, man, honestly. I feel like these are the things that they have to wheel out, right? He's got to wheel that out. But really, they were outclassed. And the injuries to our team contributed. That really disrupted our flow. I think they made some good substitutions. I think GMS and Boyce helped, you know, stick the ball for them. But, you know, even on Rogic, you know, one thing that stood out was near the end, he tracked back. And it seemed the way he uses his body, like in the attacking third, is phenomenal. But seeing him doing that to defend against Boyce, that was superb.
Yeah.
And then Boyce was all over him, and then I think, was it Halkett? Took him down at the end. And Rogic just kind of rode him. It was like he sat on his heat. It was great. But I don't know, man. I think Nielsen's just doing what Nielsen thinks he should say.
Right, okay. That's one point. He then went on. Nielsen added he would end up going to jail if he gave his opinion on referee Bobby Madden's decision to opt for a drop ball after Celtic forward Jota pulled up with a hamstring injury. "I've never seen anything like it in my life. The boy pulls his hamstring, and the referee stops the game and gives them the ball back when we're going to counter-attack. But that's Scottish football. You're in Glasgow." Hearts should have had... I counted about three bookings within the first 15 minutes, and then those players would then go on to make other fouls. So potentially Hearts could have had two players sent off. Here's what our gracious leader, Ange Postecoglou, had to say on... yeah, just listen.
Hearts manager says that his team weren't beaten by your players this evening, or they were beaten by the referee. He thinks that Kyogo was offside for the goal. I don't know if you've seen it again. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Oh, well, that means the referee's on 3 points. I mean, he's still bottom of the table, isn't he?
You can understand his frustration. This is a massive game, no?
No, I can't. No. You know, if anyone thinks the referee decided that game, they're watching a different game than I am.
Yeah, I think what he meant was that was a key decision.
Well, there's plenty of key decisions in the game. What I said was that we probably should have won by more, and that's my analysis. He has his analysis. He can communicate it the way he wants. I'm communicating the way I want. So that's my view on it.
Journalism is all about basically taking the... So from a reporting point of view, what you need to do is report what was said, right? She said... What I think he meant was... No, you don't do that. No. You say what he said, and then you wait for a reaction on that. You don't say what I think he meant was. What's your take on Ange dominating life?
He cracks me up, man. I had to put myself on mute listening to that, because he said they can't deal with him. It's brilliant, and that's why I think she's like, then she's becoming a translator and an analyst for Nielsen, because it's like he's too quick witted, and they can't deal with how he responds. That's brilliant.
Yeah,
it's like, well, the referee got 3 points and he's bottom of the table. It's super, but he's right. He's bang on, and he doesn't fight it. I think that would, you know, typically, let's like think of Lennon. Lennon would have been, he would have fought, you know, he kind of has this way about him where he kind of meets any marginal aggression or like counterpoints against Celtic with just all out fire and fire, right? Like he would just be like, well, the goal was onside. And he'd just kind of, I don't know, call Robbie Nielsen a prick or something and then storm away. But Ange just keeps his cool, deals with it, tells her the facts, and then kind of, Let's the interviewer, whoever it is, squirm, you know?
Yeah, I also love when she said, you can understand, and just as she says that line and she starts kind of, and he just goes, no, I can't. No, I can't. I can't. You know, in a lot of ways, he reminds me of, so like, you know, Martin O'Neill was one of, certainly one of my heroes. I know he's one of your heroes as well. Martin O'Neill was larger than life in a lot of ways. So when you're describing how Neil Lennon would have reacted to that, he would have been all kind of over the top and ridiculous, and to the point where you're like, well, you know, it's hard to make a cognitive... You're just angry, right? And whether he was right or wrong isn't the point. It's about how you... It's about being smarter than that. It's about knowing you have to be smarter than that. Brendan Rodgers, to me, was always very diplomatic and, you know, like... just diplomatic and didn't really put himself out there. Martin O'Neill and Ange, I think, is very similar, where they're quick, they're witty, they're making their points without going over the top. And there's really something to that. You make your case better, Mark, that way, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Martin O'Neill was a master at that. And then you saw, you know, after him, Strachan would try and emulate it, but just... it was never the same, was it?
Shut up.
Crack wee shitey jokes and stuff. But yeah, Martin O'Neill was a master of not letting them get their point across, in terms of like not letting them get one up on us whenever there was a decision or even when results went against us. He would defend the players, defend the club, but he did it in a way that wasn't, you know, just like kind of juice, you know. He was just he's a master of those kind of interviews, and people, I think, hated interviewing him because of that.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it's getting to that point with probably already with Ange, where he says what he needs to say. He says it in a very forthright and determined way. He doesn't necessarily go off kilter or off script. We've still to see him really under pressure, but I'm sure he'll deal with it fine. Here's what he had to say in regards to just the post match comments.
I thought we started the game really well. Yeah, we kind of dominated the. Where the game was played and sort of played it on our terms, and we just, we lacked a little bit of a ruthless edge tonight. We just needed that second goal. We had the chance to do that, and you know, when you don't get the second goal, the opposition hangs in there. And but I thought we were resilient. You know, I still don't think Joe had any sort of outstanding save to make, and you know, we lost some players during the game, which I think, you know, disrupted it. But you know, pleased for the win and the performance.
Yeah, you mentioned that word resilience. Is that the good thing, given Hearts were still in the game when it was just one?
Well, they're always in the game when it's one. You know, anything can happen. So you just got to. As I said, I still thought we defended well. We didn't really get opened up too much. You know, some set pieces, obviously, that always put you under pressure. But again, we handled them not too badly. So, yeah, they're always in the game when it's 1-0.
Robbie Nielsen was saying he wasn't happy. He felt your goal was offside. What was your view on it?
It's a goal, mate, isn't it? I mean, it's a weekly... anyway, I'll let it go, mate. I'll let our performances speak for themselves. If people think the referee decided this game, well... that's their analysis.
You mentioned injuries. How are the three that had to come off?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously, we'll get a sort of a roundup from the medicals. Yeah, Tony sort of felt something in his ankle, which is disappointing because, you know, he's been outstanding for us. And with the others, I'm just not really sure. So we'll just see how they get through it.
Is that a worry, given the amount of games coming up?
Yeah, it's always a worry. But, you know, that's why we've got a squad. You know, it was great for Carl and Tommy to get back in. I didn't think they had last 90, but they had to in the end. So it was great to get some game time. Monty hadn't played for quite a while at left back. So, you know, we've got some options now. So that's an important thing.
Well done tonight, Ange.
Thank you.
That's him reserved and still. Bit of salt in there. Bit salty. What did you make of, obviously, the fact that we had three players coming off, with Ralston coming off, we had Jota coming off, and with Stephen Welsh coming off. What does that do for your confidence going into Sunday?
I think I just want to point out first, I know that Stuart's been really worried about Ange's cough, and he didn't cough once in either of those interviews. So he must be off the Cuban cigars, I think.
Right.
Taking a week off them. The injuries, we don't have... we just do not have the depth in our squad to deal with these injuries. I think we were just starting to, you know, the last couple of weeks we had started to get to a good place with some amount of depth. Like the bench didn't look terrible the last couple of weeks. I think December was always going to be a tough month, but I don't know if there's any news out yet just how severe some of these injuries are, but hopefully they're not too bad. I heard some mutterings that it might just be kind of some severe cramp for some of the guys, especially Jota. So hopefully that's the case.
Yeah. In regards to those three, you've got a right back, centre half, and obviously an attacking wide player. What player, if you could have one of them definitely fit for the game against Dundee United, who would it be?
Oh, it's probably got to be Jota. I think we can probably domestically get away with kind of, you know, so if Welsh is out bringing in Beaton, but you know, CCV will be back, so yeah, and I think Montgomery actually played really well when he came on, so moving Juranovic out to the right and bringing Montgomery on the left, I still would probably prefer to see Montgomery higher up the park, but that's probably Jota. Yeah, I'm kind of mumbling around now. So, yeah.
Look, I mean, looking at the bench yesterday, Bain, Bitton, Ayeti, Abada, McCarthy, Johnson, and Montgomery. Obviously, Montgomery, Johnson, and Bitton all came on. Ayeti, Abada, McCarthy, and obviously Bain didn't come on. You know, it's weird. We go from looking like we've got strength and depth, but we're getting so many injuries. Is that just a consequence of the high-tempo, high-paced game that Ange plays? Are we going to have to accept that we're going to have times where we're going to have lots of injuries, Mark?
Yeah, definitely not an expert in this kind of thing and why we might be getting them, but I think that there's probably a case to say that, you know, with the intensity of the football that we're playing, and it doesn't seem, we all remember those kind of early kind of training videos and stuff, it doesn't seem like he just lets the players rest up during training either, and the games are coming thick and fast, so yeah, we're getting a lot of these kind of tendon and soft muscle, and it would probably indicate that it's just a high exertion type association there, but we just there's no respite for us. We can't take the foot off the gas.
Yeah, well, that's it, isn't it? What did you make of the goal itself? Some good work from Tony Ralston, and a terrific finish, a terrific onside finish from Kyogo. Ian, did you enjoy the goal? You know, should we have had a couple more? I think that chance in the first half that Jim Bagg missed, where... Talk us through your thoughts on some of the chances. And the goal. Well,
on the goal, I hated it. I fucking hate it when Celtic score. brilliantly worked. And, you know, there was a few opportunities where we really seemed to improve our ability to transition the ball fast or quickly, you know. I thought Ralston made that really nice overlap. And, you know, crossed the ball well. I mean, kind of like our goalkeeper situation, the bar isn't high, but Ralston might be our best crosser we've got, especially in those kind of low-driven kind of crosses that Kyogo seems to feed off. His movement is phenomenal. Like, people just can't pick him up. He just kind of goes in behind and makes those kind of diagonal runs. It's great. And what a finish. But Jim Bagg had a couple, didn't he? I mean, in the first half, Gordon absolutely shits it, fumbles the ball. He's too feared of that collision, I think. It happened so fast, and I think Forrest is just trying to make some connection, and he feels probably because he's so close, the chances of it going wide or hitting the post is probably so low.
Yeah.
So he's just kind of trying to touch it away from Gordon, but. The second half too, I was screaming at him. That was a great chance. His finishing was poor, but generally I thought he contributed really well.
Yeah, me too. I thought the one in the second half where Kyogo put him through, I'm not gonna lie, I was fucking cursing him. I was absolutely cursing him. Ruth Boyle cursed him so much that she put a picture, an emoji of a cow into the book club chat, which was just bizarre and weird, but there you go. But it was just, it was one of those games where if we'd taken our chances in the second half, in the second half would have been a non-event. Like, because I said to Claire before the game kicked off, I said, two or three really quick goals and then a really dull game for 75 minutes would do me perfectly. And that's really what we're looking for just now. We're looking for the stress to be taken out and just to score a few goals, right?
That would be perfect for me. I would love that. Just high state of nerves for 20 minutes. I can take that. I don't think the results really recently have really shown just how good we've been.
Yeah.
And that's almost more worrying for me. It's not like we're scrappy and then we're getting one goal and winning. It's that we're playing very well for periods, certainly for periods of the game, and we're not converting our chances or we're not creating clear-cut chances. That almost is more worrying.
Yeah, I agree. I would like, and obviously January where, you know, if we bring in Maeda, I'd like an alternative to Kyogo that isn't Kyogo just because... We don't want to burn this guy out because we've got obviously the rest of the season. Thoughts?
I would like an alternative to Kyogo too that wasn't a Yeti
or Max. Yeah.
He's played a lot of football, in terms of, you know, when he was in Japan and then coming to us, and, you know, despite apart from his injury, he's had no time off the pitch. He's had plenty of time off the pitch.
Yeah.
In terms of minutes, he's played. He's been off the pitch more than he's been on, but he's been playing a lot of football.
Yeah.
So I do think we lack that cliche of kind of being one-dimensional. I don't think we're one-dimensional, but I think we have our few kind of glimmers of quality. We really need to protect them, and we just don't have any depth to be able to do so. So that's why I think we're seeing these injuries as well. But there's such a depth of quality through the field.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like with Kyogo, you know, from the kickoff, he was chasing his man down, like instantly, running 100 miles an hour, pelting it, you know. And his energy throughout the game is huge. That's not going to last until May. It's just not, you know, I know he's going to get the break in January, but, you know, it's, you know, as we've mentioned, it's these tears, it's these hamstring pulls because of the high impact energy game. So hopefully, you know, a Maeda comes in or we get an alternative striker to come in to supplement Kyogo, because, you know, there's going to be games where it's like, you know, we're going to have maybe, you know, Scottish Cup games, you know, against Alloa away from home. Do you want to play Kyogo in that game if we don't have to? Probably not. You know, games against the bottom teams come March time where, or even the mid-table teams. My point being, we can't keep him being our only striking option. So January is massive for bringing someone in of a similar ilk in terms of style, because, you know, Giakoumakis and Ayeti are both very specific types of strikers, and, you know, they're not going to do the work that Kyogo does. I just want to highlight how much of a mutant Chris Boyd is.
He
was going mental on the telly yesterday. Referees have helped Celtic again. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to do a little advert for Specsavers. You can go there tomorrow and see my friend. Fucking idiot. I mean, Christoph Berra said it's marginal. We've seen situations in the Premier League where you think it's off or you think it's on until the lines are there and you can't tell. There's nothing in it. There's nothing in it. So this is the ex Hearts captain, Christoph Berra, saying, what can you do? That's football. And Chris Boyd laughs at him. I know I played for Hearts, but that's the objective view. And then Chris Boyd laughs again. It's not clear cut. I think Boydie's got his blue glasses on. Don't worry about that. Fucking idiot. Honestly. He goes on to talk about, like, Kyogo's foot and Ralston's foot and how Kyogo's leaning and his momentum. He genuinely was raging. And firstly, it was terrific. But secondly, it's embarrassing, isn't it, Mark, for Sky to have an absolute numpty like him on.
He's absolutely a numpy. I think it's like he's trying to play he's kind of trying to do what, like, Sutton does. He doesn't do it as well. He's not articulate enough, he's not funny enough. He's lying about the fouls. He's just an embarrassment. And I think I have no problem with commentators being biased. I mean, I consume most of my Celtic games through Celtic TV. So, I mean, that's Tom Boyd, who is phenomenal.
Sensational.
He's so biased. And I wouldn't say he was necessarily the best commentator, but he's one of Celtic's best ever captains. An absolute hero.
Me too.
So, I have no problem with... Sky Sports employing ex-Celtic, ex-Rangers players. I'm fine with it. But it's just kind of embarrasses himself. You know, like, it's just the way he makes his points. It's fine to say that you think that the goal's offside, but if you're not really, like, articulate enough to make a point about it or why you think that there's an issue there, and you're not funny enough to have a laugh about it, probably. I don't really know why he's in the job.
Yeah, it's like when Neil McCann at halftime went and got his referees... rule book. It's like they're so... Have you ever seen a Celtic pundit on Sky ever do anything like that? You just haven't. When Celtic were denied that goal at Tynecastle for offside when it was miles onside, did anybody go on the way that Chris... Chris Boyd went on yesterday? Absolutely not. Did you see, you know, a Celtic pundit going, it's a disgrace, it was onside, it's disgusting, it's the same old Hearts? You know, no, you didn't. You know, and this is the thing about Chris Boyd. Chris Boyd is biased beyond the level that he can be seen as a professional. He just seems like a wee bitter guy in the stands, which is fine. If you want to be a wee bitter guy in the stands, you know, have at it. That's most football fans. But you should be on television telling me that referees are helping Celtic again. Are you fucking kidding? It's insane.
But all his points are always in isolation.
Yeah.
Like, they're always in isolation. And what I would love I would love for Convoy to be introduced to just a wee guy in and just remind them of all the times where there's been bias towards Rangers. I would love to just see him defend that, because it's fine to say, oh, that thing's offside. But then use hyperbole and then, conjecturally say that, oh, well, there's a bias towards Celtic and this is typical and so on. One, it's just wrong. And two, I don't think he really has the cognitive ability to realise that an incident in isolation doesn't infer a whole impact on the team.
Yeah, because see, like yesterday, it's like the Hibs game. It's like, it's a penalty. There's contact. It's a penalty. Like, there's no. Well, actually, if you look at it from this point of view, there's potential. It was just like, it's a penalty. It's a penalty.
Yeah.
That's it. There was contact. That's it. It's a penalty. There's no sort of kind of actual analysis where they break it down and the question whether different angles and different points of view. It's just, it's a penalty. That's it. It's a penalty. And that's what fucking annoys me. Anyway, we're not going to spend it. I was going to cut up the clip and then I thought, I'm not having that mutant on my podcast. So there you go. Celtic played Dundee United at Tannadice on Sunday. How are you feeling about that? How are you feeling about that game? What time will it be when you're watching it, Mark?
Well, it's a 12 o'clock kickoff.
Yeah, 12 o'clock.
It'll be 8 in the morning.
Oh, it's not too bad.
It's just kind of perfect. It's kind of like Eddie would say. You get up, you have a coffee, you watch the game. It's pretty perfect. I'd rather be standing by, but even though 8 in the morning is a tough sell. Not for me, but for other people that's around my life.
Yeah, not for me either, to be honest with you. What are you thinking about the game itself?
I'm nervous just because I'm nervous about all the games right now, but it should be relatively weaky. United haven't been great. What, 2 weeks ago they got to get pumped 5-2 at the half. And then I think they beat Aberdeen. And then the last two, draw, and then, he lost against Motherwell during the week. So, they haven't been great. I haven't watched a lot of Dundee United through the season, apart from really just like a sports scene, but in my head, I always think of Dundee United as being like free-flowing and attacking and very open, and that normally suits us. And we usually bump them. I haven't watched enough of them to say that whether they're playing or not.
They're currently fourth in the league. They are 2 points behind Hearts. So people are going on about how great Hearts are and all that. Dundee United, they're only 2 points behind them. Stephen said on the social, which was on Wednesday, he basically said their points are outperforming their performance, if you know what I mean. So they're actually outperforming how well they should be in terms of the points that they're getting. They're getting more points than they deserve, in a way. You're right, in their last 10 games, they've drawn 3, they've lost 3, and they've won 4. But the last, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the last 5 games, they've lost 3, they've won 1, and they've drawn 1. So if you look at purely recent form, they're not doing great. They've got a good goalkeeper. They've got 2 good goalkeepers, actually. They've got Zegrist and they've got Trevor Carson. He's on the bench, obviously. Mulgrew and Edwards, Freeman and McMahon are the 2 fullbacks. Harkes, who's obviously the husband of Sarah Harkes, who plays for Celtic FC women's team, who are terrific. Pierre Paulette, Hottie and Niskanen. With Glass and Apreri up front. I've started to become a little bit more confident of Celtic playing away from home, weirdly. At the start of the season, it was all about, our away form was terrible and we're playing really well at home. It's kind of flipped a little bit for me. How are you feeling regarding Celtic away from Celtic Park?
I think it depends on the venue and it depends on the opposition. I think it's... Celtic Park's a very hard place to be very compact in because the pitch is so wide.
Yeah.
Similar to, I guess, with Hampden. So when we go away against, say, Livingston, I think that's why we have the last 5 years or so found it very hard to play against teams like Livingston, who, you know, the pitch is narrow, the pitch is short, and they're very compact and they have a lot of discipline. I don't think Dundee United have that level of discipline in them. You know, I think there's a few decent players in there, obviously Mulgrew and Follett, and I've had good careers. And Perry is okay. He's fine. And they can play some nice football with things, like from what I've watched of them. But I'm less concerned about going away against teams like Dundee United than I am against, say, Livingston and St. John's.
Yeah,
on the home and away thing, I think we're going to play the same way with Arbuth. So,
Obviously, Dundee United beat Rangers at Tannadice earlier in the season. They took points off us at home, and they played well in the game against us at home as well. If you're looking, obviously, Ange mentioned that Tony Ralston's probably the worst out of the three sort of injuries. You mentioned that there's talk that Jota, he's not as concerned. It's more of a sort of tightening than it is a, you know, full-out blown hamstring. Stephen Welsh as well, obviously pulled up. Carter Vickers will be back. In terms of how Celtic line up, what would you be looking for from Celtic? Let's start with the back five.
I would say it would be hard to know. It's hard to know right now. I guess just when he's saying that they're not severe, it's just that how severe it's severe and what that means actually. So I think if those guys that went off don't play, I would imagine it would be Martin Gold, Juranovic, Starfelt, CCB, Montgomery at the back.
Yeah. How would you line up? I agree with that. I think that's definitely who it will be. Midfield three, decisions to make. You've got, obviously, Bitton available. Rogic played those 90 minutes. Turnbull, those 90 minutes, and McGregor all played. Would it be a case of giving someone rest, or just as you were? Is it a case of just play the players until this period is done, and then get them the rest in January? January's the island that we can kind of relax on, and we're currently swimming against the current. So what would your midfield three be?
I'd probably go with the same. I'd go with McGregor, Rogic, and Turnbull. I think if he brings anyone, he'd be gone. And he'd probably take Rogic out and push McGregor up.
Yeah.
He's done in the six has been fine, honestly. I think he's been okay. I think our build-up play is definitely slower. But I'd definitely rather him there than probably McCarthy, and I'd rather him there than McGregor.
Yeah, I completely agree. Forward three, I guess Kyogo's going to pinned on to start. If Jota's available, Jota, who would you have on the other side?
Yeah, it's Forrest. It's got to be.
Jimbag?
And I think if Jota's not available, then it's
going to
have to be MJ.
So would you go MJ over Forrest on the left and Abad on the right?
I would. I think Emery needs a start. And maybe he'll do that, even if Jota's fine to make the bench. I think might be starting the game would be good for him, and hopefully good for us. But he's struggling.
Yeah. When Johnson came on yesterday, you know, Johnson is going to take people on and he's going to lose the ball, which I think people are fine with when it's the start of the match or when Celtic are really on top and winning. But when it's 1-0 and it's the 87th minute and he takes a guy on and he loses the ball, people are going to go bitch cakes. People are going to go, you know, they're going to react to that. And, it's not his fault. That's his game. Yeah, it's kind of, you have to take that off with the smooth with Mikey Johnson. You have to understand that whether it's the second minute or whether it's the 91st, he's going to try and he's going to square that player up and he's going to try and beat him. And if he does lose the ball, that's just his game. It's hard to kind of get people on board with that, though. And I can understand why people wouldn't be. What's your take on it, Mark?
I think there's losing the ball and then there's losing the ball. It seems to be a complete lack of understanding where he is and where the rest of the team are and when it's a good time to try and take a man on and have that risk of losing the ball compared to when it's not. There are so many times yesterday where the whole left side of the pitch is, there's just space. And he takes it right back on, loses it, and then Hearts have the whole of that left flank or their right flank open. He doesn't seem to wait until there's cover. He just kind of blindly goes. It doesn't matter. Yeah. He doesn't think beyond himself, I think, often. And even when there's better options to pass, or there's even players that are free and should be playing them in, just he ups it. You know, he just doesn't seem to think.
Yeah. On you go.
No, I was just going to say, I think we all want Celtic players, all Celtic players to do well, but especially Celtic players who are, you know, from Glasgow, come through the youth system. Those are, you know, if we could have a living guy in the field that all come through our youth system and they're good enough, I think we would all be absolutely ecstatic with that. So we all want Michael Johnson to do well, but there's just been so many false dawns with, you know, even thinking back to like the Wren game scored two, I was like, oh yeah, that's him. This is it.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's been so injury prone, and those have clearly set him back. But I don't know. I just feel like something he just needs a shape, and it's just, I don't know, put a ruler down his back or something, beat his head up or something.
You know, it's what I think Christian Wolf mentioned this a number of years ago about, you know, age and but actual kind of game experience. So by the time Christopher Ayer was 19, he'd played like 150 games. And, you know, his age didn't really matter because he'd had that experience. Mikey Johnson hasn't played a lot of football for someone of his age. And I think that's that experience of, you know, knowing when to drive, knowing when to hold the ball up. There's a lot of enthusiasm there, and there's a lot of, some could say, naivety, because it was the 89th minute, I think, and he's driving at his fullback in the box, and he loses the ball, and when the fullback gets, when the Hearts player gets the ball, it's one pass, and as you say, you're completely right, their entire right-hand side, our left-hand side, we've only got Montgomery running backwards, and it's kind of like that, you know, and people will say, oh, Ange wants to attack, that's, of course he does, that's great, but, you know, that's got nothing to do with Ange's tactics, that's got to do with, that's to do with decision-making that comes with experience, I think. Mikey Johnson is also so, I imagine within him there's a need to impress every time he comes on, and there is a level of maybe trying to do too much too soon. I like him. I've got time for him. I also hate him, and I want him to never play for us again. So it's a tough balance. I just get frustrated. I just get really frustrated. I think he's the type of player that's great when you're winning, but when you're under pressure, I think, you know, who knows? We'll see. What's your prediction for Celtic going away to the City of Discovery to take on Dundee United at Tannadice Stadium?
Well, I hate to do this to a fellow Irish Hibernian, being like Dundee Hibernian, but they've kind of made their bed by choosing to wear orange, so yep. I think they'll keep them comfortable. I think someone's due a handy, so I'm going to go with 3-0.
What was that? Sorry, I didn't hear it.
3-0. Yeah, 3-0, 3-0.
Spanking, scanting. We call that scanting.
Yeah, all goals in the first 15 minutes. And then beat up, slippers on.
Terrific. Get a cup of coffee. Thanks. Have a relax. Terrific. Look coffee. Look out the window. No worries. Lovely stuff. This weekend is massive for Celtic FC women. There is the SWPL Cup final, which takes place on Sunday. It takes place at 4:10. So, you know, if you're in Glasgow, if you fancy it, you know, the Celtic game finishes around 2:00. Get yourself to Firhill. for Hill for Thrills and watch the cup final against Glasgow City. There's a fan zone. There'll be pints. There'll be entertainment. Get involved. Make it a whole day of Celtic. Claire Wilde will be there, of course. Lorenzo will be there. I'm going to come after we do the reaction and stuff. So check it out. For that build up, we'll have the Celtic Women's Football Show podcast dropping tomorrow. And then tomorrow afternoon, we're going to have the team talk. Claire spoke to Stephen and Christian about the women's team, and we'll do a full team talk like we do with all the men's team as well. So check that out. Should be really good. We'll show how we can beat Glasgow City in a cup final. And then on Sunday, as I say, we'll have the reaction to the Dundee United game, and then the cup final happens after that. We've got some social media build up to the cup final. We've got a couple of interviews. Claire went along to the press conference, so check it out. It's massive. It's absolutely massive for Celtic FC women. Right, this has been tremendous, Mr. Braceland. Bracey, as I've never called you, but I've just decided to start calling you now at the very end of this podcast. He doesn't like it. He doesn't like Bracey. He's not a fan.
Fine with it. I've been definitely talking.
Yeah, definitely. Probably Beardy. We probably call Beardo. Baldy Beardo, maybe. Baldy Asshole. Maybe Baldy Asshole Beardo. I don't know. I'm just being really horribly offensive.
Yeah, it's okay. You're just describing yourself. It's fine.
Exactly. What a way to throw it back. I really am describing myself. Robbie Nielsen needs to shave that head.
Look, what? I don't have much nail grooming advice, but think you see once it starts to go, just get it
gone. It's like that bit in Seinfeld when George is describing going bald, and he's like, when the enemy have reached this point, you are no longer the Robbie Nielsen you once were. Get it shaved off.
Yeah, exactly. Just do, just come to Belgium and first world war. Just flood the country.
Flood it.
Just flood it. No one wants it then. Just shave it off.
Shave it off. Let's finish with fact or fiction. I ask two questions and you state if they are fact or fiction and why. Question number one, Mr. Braceland. Celtic will be ahead of Rangers in the league going into January. Fact or fiction?
When I say fiction, I'm going to say there's a point in it, and then when we beat them in the new year, then we will go ahead.
Good. So, point in it, so they're going to drop points between now and the New Year game, and then we beat them in New Year, we go ahead, and we leave them in our wake.
Yeah, and then that's it. Yeah, I think that's they're not playing well, but you know, still be helping the fouls, they're getting results, which is a point in the force. The anger I felt was obvious. The other day, it was just so difficult. And he's done it twice now, you know what I mean? So it's, it doesn't help my mental state. But I truly believe that we will, after that game, we'll be ahead of it.
Beautiful. Second question. Tam Rogic will play more games for Celtic this season than he has ever before in a season. So he'll basically play a full catalogue of games the way he hasn't before. Thoughts? Fact or fiction?
I'm glad you caveated it, because I of course had a smart answer. Well, if you mean people.
Aye, very good.
What's his most appearances? Is that 17, 18? That would be what, 40?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember him playing heavily in that game. In that season. I think we're certainly on course for it. Whether we should or shouldn't is maybe for another day, but we have very little options. So unless something really dramatically changes in January, we get a bunch of guys through the door who are first team quality, or there's something unfortunate that happens, then I think we'd be on course for him playing more than 42 games in that season. So
I would say that we're pushing towards him. Yeah, beautiful. 42 the 17-18 season, and he's played 22 already this season, so halfway there. Mark Braceland, I know that half of 42 is 21, by the way. So that's fine. I've done maths. Mark Braceland, this has been an absolute pleasure, sir. Thank you for getting involved, and we'll speak to you soon.
Thanks a lot for having me on, mate.
Lovely stuff. He's Mark Braceland. I'm Chris Gallagher. We've got a lot of stuff coming up over the weekend and throughout December. Stick with The Cynic, thecynic.co. We will speak to you down the road.